Welcome to Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson with our host, psychologist and best-selling author, Dr. James Dobson, along with Luann Crane. Luann, we've got a fun and an important discussion today that I know you've been looking forward to.
Well, I have, Ryan, because it features one of my favorite people, your father, and our host, Dr. James Dobson, talking about his brand new book, Head Over Heels, How to Fall in Love and Land on Your Feet. I love that subtitle. I could have sure used that book a few years ago when I was learning about young men. But actually, Doctor, the topic here is about understanding romantic love, which can be pretty confusing for young men and women.
Well, actually, Luann, I'm not sure older people comprehend
it
much better because there's a lot of confusion about this subject, and we're going to try to fix that today.
Good.
Maybe too late for some of our listeners, but perhaps not.
I'm looking forward to it.
Dad, we're going to be sharing today segments from your August newsletter. You know, it's funny to think when we started this ministry 2 years ago, we had about 400 people on our mailing list.
Mostly from your Christmas card list, Doctor.
That's right. It's amazing. There are nearly 200,000 people on our mailing list now. Mm-hmm. And every month, Dad, you spend up to 40 hours writing a letter to them personally about a subject you feel is going to be important to them and their family. Mm-hmm. I heard Mom saying the other day that she was talking to the leader of a ministry, and he said, you know, I get a lot of letters from Christians and other ministries, and they're always asking for something, either asking us to donate money or buy something from them. And he said that, frankly, those just go in the trash. He doesn't have time to read them, but that, Dad, your letters have impact on not only his life, but they've got relevance for his audience as well. They've got takeaway value, and that he not only reads each and every one, but he passes some of them on to others, and that really does say something.
Well, you know, Ryan, I take these letters very seriously because it's just another form of ministry. Mm-hmm. If I'm going to write everybody, why don't I put my very best work into it and share what I think is relevant to the culture at the time?
That's right.
Last month, we read my July letter on the air, and that was the most popular, brought the most response
of
any program we did that month. And that's why we re-aired the reading of that letter last week, because it is highly relevant to what's going on in the culture. Had to do with marriage.
Dad, I got to ask you, you've been doing these letters for a long time, and you have not taken any less time crafting them. How many times over the years have you had people say, you know, you don't need to work this hard? You know, they don't have to be that good. You don't need to spend 40 hours on just one letter.
Well, you know, Ryan, it costs money to send a letter out to people today. We make my letters available on our website and so on, too. But there's nothing like a letter that comes in the mail and you've got a hard copy in front of you. So if we're going to spend that money doing that, I might as well do it as well as I possibly can. And that's why I do invest a lot of myself in these letters. And that raises another issue, a related issue. There are a lot of people listening to us right now who don't get those letters.
That's right.
And they have traditionally seen them as what's called appeal letters or requests for money. I might, in those letters when we need it, include two or three lines saying how we're funded and that we could sure use the help, because that's true right now. But that's not why I write them. Mm-hmm. I write them because of ministry, and that's what I'm here for.
So those of you who are not on the mailing list, familytalk.org, right now you can sign up to receive them.
It costs nothing, and that's the biggest bargain in ministry.
That's true. Doctor, the topic of your August newsletter, as some may probably have guessed by now, is your brand new book, Head Over Heels, How to Fall in Love and Land on Your Feet. And you started this newsletter with a story from your college experiences that really ties right into this topic.
You know, my assistant, Becky Lane, has been with me for quite a while. And in fact, she said the other day, I've been working for you for 7 years, and I'm still learning things about you that I didn't know and I've never heard before. And so I start with a story that I don't believe I have shared, certainly not in a letter before, and let me read it. It says, "Dear friends, last month I wrote you about the legalization of same-sex marriage in New York and elsewhere and its implications for the institution of the family." That was the letter that we re-aired last week.
Mm-hmm.
It was a disturbing message, but one that Americans need to hear. Mm. This month, however, I want to lighten the dialogue and write you about a much more pleasant topic. The subject again is marriage, but this time we'll talk about the meaning of romantic love, what it is and what it isn't. Mm. I'm sort of an expert on this subject because of my experiences in college. You see, my mother and father were evangelists during those years, and they were on the road all the time. It was too expensive for them to maintain a home while I was away. I was an only child, so that explains. Thus, I didn't have any place to go during the summer months and at other times when all my friends were on vacation. Hmm. So I lived in a dorm with a few other homeless students while we worked. What a drag. When I was 19, I found a job on a Lincoln Mercury assembly line. I spent 10 hours a day working down in a pit below the slow-moving cars, where it was my responsibility to attach bumpers and front ends of Ford products. That year, Lincoln grills were covered with chrome and weighed 185 pounds, and I had to shift them around with one hand to get the bolts in place. When the other hand was free, I held a 20-pound air gun above my head to tighten things down. That thrilling routine went on from the morning bell to the merciful close of the line at 6 o'clock. I spent 2 hours a day traveling to and from the plant and another hour cleaning the grease off my hands, nails, and face at night. Then I would eat, usually alone. None of us had a television set and I didn't have a car, so I read in the dorm or tried to amuse myself by listening to the radio. Big whoop for a guy fresh out of adolescence and brimming with testosterone. It was a lonely existence. My cousin, H.B. London, worked the night shift at Lincoln Mercury. He was transporting 800 jack handles on a four-wheel dolly one evening and accidentally ran it into a wall. He stood in horror as every jack handle crashed to the floor. It sounded like World War III. HB spent the next 8 hours picking them up one at a time and hoping no one noticed. For our labors at Lincoln Mercury, we were paid a staggering $2 an hour without overtime and 8 hours on Saturday. Well, it beat washing dishes for $1.25. Even though I lived with boredom, those days proved to be very useful to me in the long run. In desperation, I bought a heavy reel-to-reel Webcore tape recorder to keep my sanity. It cost $160 and took 2 years to pay for. That primitive tube device helped me become familiar with the sound of my own voice and learn the art of speaking into a microphone. It was perfect training for a future radio psychologist. Isn't it interesting how God often uses seemingly inconsequential experiences to help us master the skills that we will need later on? Mm-hmm. I counted the days during the summer months while waiting for the students to come back to school. June, July, and August seemed to last for an eternity. Finally, my friends began pouring into the dorms, rather like the swallows coming back to Capistrano. What excited me was not the return of my guy friends. What really lit my fire was a new crop of girls that showed up in all their loveliness. Some of them were gorgeous, and I wanted to date them all. For a guy who had been tinkering with a tape recorder and sitting alone in a dorm, it was heaven to see real, live young women sashaying across the campus. Man, that was a rush. About the 15th of September, I fell madly in love with someone. It always turned my world upside down. I couldn't eat, couldn't sleep, and couldn't study for several weeks. In fact, studying was the first thing to go. I look back on those days now with fond memories. The world was young, and life was good. I learned a lot about those fascinating creatures called girls in those days and began to understand how romantic love works, not only in my head, but also in the hearts of the fair sex. What a trip. One of the co-eds who rattled my radar in my senior year was a sophomore named Shirley. Her mother loved Shirley Temple, and that's why she's named Shirley. I learned later that she had been secretly watching me play tennis in my very abbreviated tennis shorts. She walked up to me on the way to class one day and said out of the blue, "Hi, legs." Well, I was 6'2", and about 90% of my height was below the waist. That little flirt got my attention, I promise you that. 3 years later, I married her. And yes, our romantic love is still alive and well some 51 years later. And Shirley still tells me every now and then that she still likes my legs. Smart girl.
Did you just call my mom a flirt?
You didn't know your mom, did you?
Well, we will attest to the fact that you two are quite attracted to each other. We enjoy seeing Mrs. Dobson around here, Doctor. Like Becky Lane, I had not heard that story either, and I found it quite delightful, so thanks for sharing it.
Mm-hmm. Luann, I had a lot of fun in college, and I bet you there's some other things you don't know.
I hope we hear those in future newsletters.
Some of them.
Yeah. Doctor, we are going to talk about your book, Head Over Heels, for the balance of the program. But before we do that, there's actually a fourth voice at this table today, and you would like to introduce her.
In fact, I would, Luann. Also joining us at the table is Joni Riley, who is an intern for us here at Family Talk. And she's about the age that I was writing for in Head Over Heels. And Joni, we're so glad to have you join us. You're usually on the other side of the glass doing what producers do. And this is the first time you've had an opportunity to talk on microphone, right?
Yes, it is.
And you're scared half to death.
I'll be scared to death in about 10 minutes when it hits me what I'm doing.
Well, we want to talk about this subject of romantic love. And I've written a book, of course, called Head Over Heels. And it's a book for people just about your age. And you have read it.
Yes.
And you loved it.
Yes, it was a very good book. I really appreciated it. Came at a good time in my life.
Do you understand what I meant when I said that a lot of people are confused about what romantic love really means?
Oh, yes. I see it almost on a daily basis on college, even in high school.
Your emotions can fool you. Mm-hmm. You can think this is forever, and it's not even alive in 3 months.
It's a fleeting whim that falls away on the wind that fast, and you're just taken away with it, and the next thing you know, you're flat on your back.
You're going to do well, Joni. I'll tell you, when I was your age, you're 21?
Yes, sir, I am.
When I was your age, I would like to have done what you're doing. So thank you, Joni, for being with us. And having read the book, we are going to just ask you to jump in wherever you want to and share your thoughts about what we're talking about.
Okay.
Well, Doctor, let's continue with your letter if we could, because really what you shared next in it sets the stage for this concept of really understanding romantic love.
Sounds good, Luann. Here we go. Many young people grow up with a very distorted concept of romantic love. The confusion begins when boy meets girl and the entire sky lights up in romantic profusion. Smoke and fire are followed by lightning and thunder, and the dazzled couple finds itself knee-deep in what may or may not turn out to be true love. Mm-hmm. Adrenaline is pumped into the cardiovascular system by the pint, and every nerve is charged with 220 volts of electricity. Then two little couriers go racing up the respective backbones of the boy and girl and blast their exhilarating messages into each spinning head. This is it. The search is over. I've found the perfect human being. Hooray for love. Well, for our romantic young couple, it's simply too wonderful to believe. They want to be together 24 hours a day, to take walks in the rain and sit by the fire and kiss and smooch and cuddle. They get all teary-eyed just thinking about each other. And it doesn't take very long for the subject of marriage to propose itself. So they set the date and reserve the chapel and contact the minister and order the flowers. The big night arrives amidst mother's tears and dad's grins and jealous bridesmaids and frightened little flower girls. The candles are lit, and the bride's sister butchers two songs. One of them was written by the mother of the bride a week before the wedding. Then the vows are muttered, rings are placed on trembling fingers, and the preacher tells the groom to kiss his new wife. Then they spread up the aisle, each flashing 32 teeth, on the way to the reception. Friends and well-wishers hug and kiss the bride, and roll our eyes at the groom, and eat the awful cake. Ours was terrible, by the way. And follow the instructions of the perspiring photographer. Finally, the new Mr. and Mrs. run from the party in a flurry of birdseed and confetti and strike out on their honeymoon. So far, the beautiful dream remains intact, but it is living on borrowed time. Mm-hmm. Not only is the first night in the hotel less exciting than advertised, but it also turns into a comical disaster. She's exhausted and tense, and he is self-conscious and phony. From the beginning, sex is tinged with the threat of possible failure. Their vast expectations for the marital bed lead to disappointment and frustration and fear. Since most human beings have an almost neurotic desire to feel sexually adequate, each partner tends to blame his or her mate for any orgasmic problems, which eventually add a note of anger and resentment to the relationship. About 3 o'clock on the second afternoon, the new husband gives 10 minutes of thought to the fateful question, "Have I made an enormous mistake?" Mm. The sum of what I've written is tongue-in-cheek. It's intended to be humorous or lighthearted. But this one right here is critical. Mm-hmm. The feeling of being trapped that can occur shortly after marriage.
And, Dad, you've gotten this from the past 33 years in a ministry where people write you and tell you things like this. This isn't everybody, but you've heard it enough times to include it because you know it's going to make sense to a lot of people.
Well, it's a deliberate overstatement of the situation. And a lot of people don't experience this, but a lot of people do.
Yeah.
And a member of our staff came up to me after reading this letter and my book and said, "You described my marriage to a T." Mm-hmm. And they're happily married today, but they went through these steps and stages that I'm talking about. His silence increases her anxieties and the seeds of disenchantment are born. Each partner has far too much time to think about the consequences of this new relationship, and they both begin to feel trapped. Their initial argument is a silly thing. They disagree momentarily over how much money to spend for dinner on the third night of the honeymoon. She wants to go someplace romantic to charge up the atmosphere, and he wants to eat with Ronald McDonald. The flare-up lasts only a few moments and is followed by apologies, but some harsh words have been exchanged, which took the keen edge off the beautiful dream. They will soon learn to hurt each other much more effectively. Mm-hmm. The important thing to remember here is I'm drawing a contrast between that exhilaration of the courtship prior to marriage and how quickly that can turn to anxiety and fear. Somehow they make it through the 6-day trip and travel home to set up housekeeping together. Then the world starts to splinter and disintegrate before their eyes. The next fight is bigger and better than the first. He leaves home for 2 hours and she calls her mother. Mm. Throughout the first year, they're engaged in a recurring contest of wills, each vying for power and leadership. That first year can be a struggle for who's in charge.
Oh, yeah.
And in the midst of this tug of war, she staggers out of the obstetrician's office with the words ringing in her ears, "I have some good news for you, Mrs. Jones." If there is anything on earth Mrs. Jones doesn't need right now, it's good news from an obstetrician. From there to the final conflict, we see two disappointed, confused, and deeply hurt young people wondering how it all came about. A little tow-headed lad or a beautiful little princess soon comes into the family. That child and those yet to come may never enjoy the benefits of a stable home. They will be raised by their mother and will always wonder why Dad doesn't live here anymore. Now, the picture that I've painted does not reflect every young marriage, and I want to make that clear. That should be obvious. But it's representative of far too many of them. The divorce rate is higher in America than in any other civilized nation in the world, and it's rising. In the case of our disillusioned young couple, what happened to their romantic dream? How did the relationship that began with such enthusiasm turn so quickly into resentment and hostility? They could not have been more enamored with each other in the beginning, but their happiness blew up in their startled faces. Why didn't it last? How can others avoid the same unpleasant surprise? To help clarify this tragic misunderstanding, I developed a 10-point quiz for use in teaching groups of teenagers. But to my surprise, I found that adults didn't score much higher on the quiz than their adolescent offspring. You may want to take this quiz to measure your understanding of romance, love, and marriage. And then the book continues with the 10 true-false questions that, I don't know, Luanna Ryan, we might want to ask our listeners to take. Take a little test here, and let's see how well you do.
You know, Dad, hearing you tell that story about how things can go awry even on the honeymoon when it doesn't go the way a couple might expect or the way they had planned makes me think of my own wedding. Laura and I had this beautiful wedding on a beach, and then we go heading off to our hotel, which we had only seen online. And when we got there, they had literally not changed that decor since 1962. It had this long yellow-orange shag carpet that no longer stood up to make a cushion. It was laid down flat and thin. And the bed was like a taco shell. It was so sagged in the middle. And we just laughed. We just laughed the whole night.
Shirley's mom did not live where we were married. And my mom was in another part of the country. So Shirley and I had to do the entire wedding ourselves. And Shirley didn't drive at that time. And so after working all day, I had to drive her around for flowers and all the other things. And by the time the wedding was over, we were totally exhausted, exhausted beyond belief. And then we drove 150 miles to the hotel that we were going to stay in. And I won't get intimate with you, but the next morning at 6 a.m., the cleaning lady burst through the door, and we had hoped to sleep in on that morning. So everybody has a story to tell. Well, our time is gone, but there ought to be a way to help young couples avoid some of the pitfalls that are predictable, and they're discussed here in this book, Head Over Heels, and maybe we can pick that up tomorrow.
Well, Dad, tomorrow, why don't we start with your 10-point quiz? It's a true or false quiz, so you can be looking forward to that tomorrow, our listeners, and we'll have our listeners take it along with us, and you can kind of describe what this is all about.
Now, don't cheat. Don't read the book and get the answers.
Looking forward to that, and Ryan, actually, even as someone who's been married over 25 years, I also found that quiz very helpful to take because it helps better identify the expectations that you had when you first started and then kind of reassures you that where you're at right now is okay.
Now, Joni, we invite you in here to be on the program. We didn't let you say one thing, but we want you to be here next time, and we'll let you take the test.
Sounds good.
All right. The book is called Head Over Heels, How to Fall in Love and Land on Your Feet. We definitely have copies available at familytalk.org or ask about it when you call 877-732-6825.
What a great gift it would make for young couples you know or to brush up on your own knowledge about romantic love. And when you request it from us, you're helping us continue to bring programs and resources to help strengthen your family.
We certainly could use that partnership right now, Ryan. Again, request that at familytalk.org or when you call 877-732-6825. Also ask about how you can sign up for all of Dr. Dobson's monthly newsletters.
Thanks for listening. We look forward to continuing this conversation tomorrow on Family Talk with Dr. James Dobson.